You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Oh, this is depressing. Just coming as a cybersecurity professional here, thousands of would-be participants began to get kind of antsy, when they tried to log in for the 1 p.m. start of this conference, and it didn't go live on schedule. Now, as the comments from waiting participants in chat began to mount, a fake Eventbrite link, which basically many unsuspecting users clicked on, was posted in the LinkedIn chat function asking for credit card details, leading the Institute to plead with participants not to try to use any of the links posted in the chat. Now, when an official-looking AICD link appeared in the event, some users who hadn't learned their lesson the first round tried to follow it, only to complain that it didn't work, and eventually, about 30 minutes into this whole mess, the Institute bowed to the inevitable, and they just canceled the entire event. Now, Mr. Rigotti said that Monday evening that it was unclear if any credit card details had actually been handed over, and urged anybody affected to contact their credit card issuers, obviously, and I quote, "The AICD apologizes sincerely for the unacceptable issues with the LinkedIn Live event." And this is absolutely depressing. I mean, you go to some conferences and everybody's hacking everybody. Black Hat, fine, okay, whatever. But this is literally just, hey, let's go talk about Australian data breaches and new governance laws and all this kind of stuff. And everybody, cybersecurity professionals, want to hear this. And you're sitting in chat and you're bored and you're talking with people. Well, somebody started fishing the entire cybersecurity community that was watching this. And we may have had some of our colleagues hit. This is just embarrassing for the industry, you know, my beloved industry. And quite frankly, I just did a video the other day on how all burned out we are. So I believe people are like, oh, okay, I'll just click it, assuming it's real. And here we go. But we all have to maintain vigilance. So it's not just us, you know, blathering on about security controls for the rest of you. We have to practice what we preach. And that's something that we just obviously need a little bit of help on as well. But there you go. I'm not pulling any punches. It's a black eye to the cybersecurity community. I hope the AICD does put on an event, and I hope they've got a pretty good phishing filter in the chat next time they do this. Those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is, well, it's pretty timely. We've got an election coming up. And depending on when you're listening to this, we've either got days or maybe about 1 week or so to the midterm election. And that's gearing up to be rather contentious. I don't think anybody really is going to argue with that. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. I want to talk about disinformation and misinformation online. Now, I have to start with this. And this is basically, I'm not basically taking this from the perspective of one political side or the other. I want to make that very clear. I want to talk about how disinformation is becoming pervasive and driving a wedge into society as it's literally creating two different realities for us. I think everybody kind of knows this. Everybody kind of understands this. Everybody has somebody in their life, I don't care if it's a relative, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker, whatever it is, that basically has a different set of beliefs on the actual facts of something that happened. This is what we are talking about. My goal here is to give everyone evidence of how much disinformation is out there in the hopes that when you read anything posted online, you can healthily approach it with skepticism, healthy skepticism, instead of confirmation bias initially, and then work to confirm it's true. And what I mean by confirmation bias is, okay, you see something from the right or you see something from the left, and basically it maybe it's fake or it's misinformation or it's disinformation. And if you're on the right and you see it from the right, you say, aha, it is good. But if you see it on the left, and if you see it from the left and you're on the right, now you're like, well, I'm skeptical about that. Whereas I'm talking about taking all information from the left and the right and being skeptical until it's verified, until you can confirm it's true. And so I want to break this down
basically by the two largest platforms that are driving the worst of the worst of misinformation and disinformation in society. And we're going to start with TikTok, because TikTok obviously is the largest, fastest growing, most expanding social media platform out there. Now, Futurism, the publication, had a great write-up on this. And so I'm cribbing and paraphrasing and sometimes downright quoting them. And here's what's going on with TikTok, because if you didn't know, outside of all the issues I've mentioned on this radio show, if you're a longtime listener, this is another problem that we've got, because according to a new report from Global Witness and NYU's Cybersecurity for Democracy team, TikTok is absolutely terrible at filtering out harmful misinformation regarding elections and politics. Now, the report actually tested TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all of which performed, quite frankly, poorly at detecting and removing misinformation-laden advertising content uploaded by these researchers. And so basically what they were doing is they were uploading demonstrably false information, as advertisements to see if they could get them through TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. And so TikTok basically was, as I mentioned, the worst offender out this. Now, out of these, TikTok, like I said, proved to be the worst. After uploading a ton of ill-informed, potentially dangerous advertisements for approval, the researchers found that 90% of those fake ads were ultimately approved by TikTok. Now, although the report is still preliminary, that is basically an incredibly alarming figure, especially considering how quickly TikTok's growth has outpaced that of other platforms in recent years. It's very popular with younger people, meaning we are training essentially a generation with misinformation and disinformation, and that is a huge problem. And don't take my word for it, because Olivia Little, co-author of the report, talking to The Guardian, said, and I quote, "This year is going to be much worse as we near the midterms. There has been an exponential increase in users, which only means there will be more misinformation TikTok needs to proactively work to stop, or we risk facing another crisis." Now, per this report, the fake advertisements ranged in what might be basically considered a levels of severity. So some, for example, contained misleading details like incorrect election dates. Some included misleading or false voting requirements. Others still use language that outright discouraged citizens from voting in the midterms at all. And while a failure to basically filter out that much false and therefore inherently dangerous material is a bad look for any platform, it seems especially so for one that's prided itself on its policies regarding election content and political advertisements. Now, TikTok's loudly made clear in the past that its policies do not allow for any paid political ads. Any verified political accounts are automatically disqualified from using pay-to-play tools available to influencers. And just this past August, midterms obviously down the road from August, a couple of months away when we're there, the platform announced new and improved policy changes designed to tackle the misinformation threat. Now, it's also worth noting that this is the second time that TikTok has explicitly come under fire for basically, for lack of a better term, threatening American democracy in recent days with all of this disinformation. And understand that this is exactly what it is. If you've got hyped up fear and paranoia, you are literally threatening the underpinnings of what makes a democracy stable, such as free and fair elections. Now, the same day that this report was officially released, it was also revealed by Forbes that TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, had actually been planning on using the app's location data to track and spy on the physical locations of quote-unquote specific U.S. citizens. I actually did a daily video and podcast on that. It's unclear, for the record, if that ever came to fruition, but Forbes received internal documentation that showed that TikTok basically was going to be a surveillance app for specific people. Were that politicians? Were those journalists? Who were they going to track? These are things that we just have no real knowing until we find a whistleblower or a leaker for this. Now, as The Guardian also points out, TikTok's remarkably tailored algorithm is inextricably linked to its misinformation failures. Like any of the platform's popular dance trends, misinformation can go very viral very quickly, as was recorded in a report from, interestingly enough, Mozilla, the nonprofit, during Kenya's elections in August. And I was actually looking at that back in August. I think I mentioned it on the radio show, definitely in the daily podcast, that they were seeing just absolute rampant disinformation. And we've seen disinformation campaigns like this. A genocide in Myanmar due to disinformation on Facebook is one of those just most horrific examples of this. Now, on top of this, Helen Lee Boyegi, and I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, she heads a media literacy platform called Reboot, or the Reboot Foundation. And I quote her, "If the TikToks of the world really want to fight fake news, they could do it. But as long as their financial model is keeping eyes on the page, they have no incentive to do so. That's where policymaking needs to come into play." And I completely agree with Helen here. That is a huge, huge thing, because we can look at the past previous top worst offender that is number two still, but still going strong in the misinformation and disinformation category, and that is Facebook. That is the other platform that I want to talk about here today. They aren't doing so well either on this front, as I've mentioned over and over and over past the years, and the disinformation and misinformation has just been absolutely rampant on Facebook as well. Now, in an effort to address this basically dangerous situation and safeguard the election, Meta, aka Facebook, has to make essentially like rapid course corrections, including investing more in content moderation staff, rooting out accounts that are promoting conspiracies, poll rigging, false information about voting hours and locations, and on and on and on. At this point, it's basically too late. Like I said, you're listening to this probably just less than a week away from the election, if not maybe on election day, depending on what station you're listening it to. So let's go through the list here, basically, of the just enormous failures of Facebook. Now, this was put together by USA Today, so I'm switching from Futurism and cribbing now from USA Today, but this was, I mean, just yes, 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 just checking every box as I track Facebook on a regular basis for this radio show and also my daily work. So here is how just Facebook has failed to fix its problems and basically is now becoming a fundamental threat to free and fair elections. I think this is a huge, huge thing. So first things first, Meta has cut its election integrity staff by 80%. They had 300 people. They are now down to 60, and that is according to the New York Times. This means fewer experts on hand to detect election lies, voting misinformation, and foreign interference in the midterms, and or just putting in place the safeguards to stop them. And think about this. When you have a population of over 300 million, hundreds of million of which are on Facebook, they only had 300 people looking at the elections for the entire nation, the U.S. nation, not to mention the world. And that 300 went down to 60. That is dismal. That is not even a rounding error. Crazy in terms of the size of the team that they actually need. Now, on top of this, and this is the other point that they made, is that many Spanish language pages that were pushing disinformation about voting integrity since the 2020 election are still up on Meta platforms, even though their English language counterparts have been taken down. The content ranges from baseless claims about voting machines to essentially lies about dead people voting. All of this is specifically designed to mislead or suppress votes of the Hispanic community. And part of the problem that Facebook has always had, on a tangent to USA Today, is that they've never had enough foreign language speakers, meaning Facebook was founded in English, Mark Zuckerberg knows English, et cetera, et cetera. And so as Facebook went into other languages around the world, Spanish, Arabic, you know, Farsi, you take your pick, Japanese, they have not kept up with the translators or those teams as well. Now, on top of this, and the next point is that the Change in Terms Coalition recently shared with Facebook posts that target and harass election workers, as well as posts labeling the January 6th riot at the Capitol as a hoax. The Global Project Against Hate and Extremism has actually identified ongoing efforts by extremist groups and known election disinformers to use social media platforms to threaten election workers, threaten candidates, spread 2020 election conspiracy theories, demonize immigrants, basically attack black and brown communities, and intentionally confuse voters in six battleground states. That is a huge, huge thing as well. And again, this is not political. I do not consider extremism as part of the political ideology. You know, this goes above and beyond the debate of, you know, well, should we have a tax cut? Should we not have a tax cut? Should we increase taxes? Should we not increase taxes? We are talking about actually threatening election workers, threatening candidates that one group or another disagrees with. This is the antithesis of the political system. We should all agree that extremism and political violence is something that cannot be condoned in society. And look at how it's spreading on Facebook as people are tracking it, as groups are tracking this. Now, on top of this, and this is another point, is that researchers and academics face widespread problems accessing election information with the CrowdTangle tool that measures the flow of content across the platform. And Facebook has fewer public-facing information guides on the election than it has in previous cycles. They've been winding this down. I talked about this before. So, for example, New York University data researcher Laura Edelson, whom Facebook cut off from accessing this data, recently said that the platform's lack of data transparency represents a very real problem to those trying to basically alert users to the ongoing creation and spread of anti-democratic content. And so that is another problem that we've got. The actual mechanisms they had to start tracking the flow of misinformation and disinformation as it circulated around Facebook is a project that they're actually shutting down on top of cutting their election and integrity staff from 300, which was small to begin with, down to 60. Now, on top of this, and this is another point, Meta's president of global affairs, Nick Clegg, recently indicated that he was considering allowing Donald Trump back onto the company's platforms in January, in spite of basically right now, Donald Trump on his own platform, Truth Social, has basically been retweeting, I think they call it retruthing, things like QAnon conspiracies and all these kinds of things. That is obviously a huge issue. Now, I'm not, again, talking about the president here of the United States. I'm talking about basically the spread of essentially conspiracy theories that are baseless. Now, you might love the president, you might hate the president. That is not my business. That is not my concern. We can have a debate on what is actually free speech. Should he be allowed back on Facebook and Twitter and all of these kinds of things after essentially receiving lifetime bans in the wake of January 6th? That is not my point here. My point here is that if, let's say, Donald Trump does come back, and with him comes basically a wider audience for things like QAnon conspiracies and all of these different kinds of things, then we've got a bit of a problem here because now disinformation is running rampant. And you may believe all of the QAnon stuff, but understand, I have yet to see any real proof of this. All of these things are in the ether, if you will, but without anything concrete. You know, not to mention things like anti-Semitism and everything else that we're seeing on a rise right now. There was a recent issue in, Jacksonville, Florida, where basically people were like laser displaying on I think it was like a stadium and a building and all of that. And I believe the quote was Kanye West was right about the Jews. I mean, obviously, it's these kinds of things that are deeply concerning because we are talking about political violence, and the foundation that really supports and encourages that. So this is a huge, huge thing. Now, on top of that, and I continue on, Meta continues to exempt politicians from its fact-checking program. They have third parties that will fact-check. This allows politicians to run advertising with false claims. Now, recent research found that Meta's ad library, which it supposedly uses to track all political ads on its platform, can't even correctly determine what constitutes a political ad and what doesn't. And interestingly enough, when Mark Zuckerberg was questioned about this a while back, I believe it was a member of Congress who asked him, hey, if I post something demonstrably false on my account and I decide to pay for advertising for it, are you going to stop me? And Mark Zuckerberg said no. I mean, so this is obviously a huge thing as well. We have politicians right now that are running for office, that basically are looking at undermining or fundamentally changing how elections work. Again, I'm not getting political here, but we have to have a bipartisan, basically, acceptance of changing anything. We can't force a change. And that is a huge, huge problem because what we're doing is alienating one side or the other. So this is obviously just an absolute mess. Now, in 2020, Meta, obviously then Facebook, acceded to pressure to stop election misinformation and implemented basically what whistleblower Frances Haugen later called a break glass measure designed to slow the spread of the worst of the information, misinformation during important elections in times of crisis. Now, this included changing the platform's news feeds to uprank credible news sources in an effort to drown out misinformation. So when you're going from that like really, really sketchy, sketchy, you know, website that, you know, is just not fact checking, not linking sources, not doing anything and saying some outrageous things. You know, like, for example, JFK Jr. is alive and well and coming back. Well, that's something that wouldn't be upranked. You'd uprank a news source that has an editorial process, a vetting process, all these kinds of things that can confirm that, yeah, no, JFK Jr. actually died. And that really is a conspiracy that's going around right now. So it's crazy. So they should start basically using, I think, that break glass measure. And again, we are days, literally days away. I mean, it is Monday. It is Halloween as I am sitting here broadcasting my first broadcast. And you're probably hearing me after Halloween, but this is what we're talking about. So here are the things that essentially Facebook can do to really, really start fixing this issue in the long run. And this would also go for TikTok as well, but we're gonna start with Meta here. And I should really be calling them Meta because now they are Meta, even though Facebook is their product and blah, blah, blah. But here are some core points, again, laid out by USA Today that I thought were absolutely great. You know, I've added a little bit here, but for the most part, they had a really good list. So the first one is Meta must prioritize credible news and information in its feed by boosting the algorithm tied to its news ecosystem quality. That's an internal news rating system that assigns a higher value to quality reporting and by default downranks hate and misinformation. Basically, they took that measure across platforms following the 2020 election to see if that was in place. That was part of the break glass, I believe. Now, on top of this, Meta can reject any advertising that delegitimizes election outcomes at a national, state, and local level, including from candidates themselves. It can ban volatile accounts and remove all posts that incite election violence. Now, I'm all for that. I really am. But here's the thing. They already have some of these things in place, but I don't think they're good. I think overall what Meta needs to do is just ban political advertising altogether. I have a public Facebook account. You can go follow me there, etc. I've occasionally boosted posts. You know, maybe it's something I've written or something along those lines. And if something I've written, let's say, has some kind of political tint to it, meaning like let's analyze the politics as it relates to cybersecurity, for example. I literally just wrote an article on that. When I try to boost it, Facebook says I cannot boost it because it's political in nature. And if I want to do that, I've got to give them my driver's license. And then they're going to mail me a card. I believe it is that, you know, I have to validate and all of that. I mean, they're trying to put some of these things in place. But why not just ban all political advertising altogether? I think that is basically the way they can do that. Meta can also, and this is the other point they make, is reject any advertising that delegitimizes election outcomes at national, state, or local levels, including from the candidates themselves. You know, it can ban those kinds of accounts as well. So, I mean, I think that is a huge, huge thing. And I think I just mentioned that, but it's just, I can't really stress that enough. Now, on top of this, Meta should prioritize a review of possible harassment of election workers, which is happening across its platforms. The company is well aware that this is happening, but many of these threatening posts actually remain up, according to studies. So like I said, that is another huge thing as well. I mean, we've seen in the last couple of years, just was bewildering to me, just even in my own neighborhood here in the Chicagoland area, that my local school board was actually getting death threats. Yeah, they were actually getting death threats over things like mask mandate and all of that. And then that morphed into, I think it was critical race theory, which is not being taught in the schools, according to the school administrators, and on and on and on. So we have so much stuff going on. And when we are threatening election workers, and we've seen a ton of election officials and election workers and poll workers quit, God forbid they are replaced with people that are hyper-partisan or extremist that will essentially say, well, I'm just going to exclude any vote I don't like and include only the ones I want, or immediately question everything, which then ties up the election for months, you know, causing chaos. I mean, these are things that I think are a huge, huge problem. And finally, and I thought this was a really good point by USA Today, Meta can listen to itself. Can listen to its own civic and integrity team's recommendations for the 2022 election that they haven't fully implemented yet, but they can also include crucial steps like dialing back reliance on what the company calls downstream, quote, meaningful social interactions, end quote, that spark engagement, but can also drive the spread of misinformation. Other studies have shown, outside of USA Today, other studies have shown that essentially what actually gets the most traction, aka the most money, the most ad generating revenue for Facebook, are those articles that are the most incendiary are those posts from everybody's crazy uncle that basically turns up to 11, the JFKs are alive, and et cetera, et cetera. The anger is what sells. And that is, I think, just deeply disturbing, because what we are not seeing are critical thinking. We are not seeing people move beyond their confirmation bias. And that's a huge problem. I mean, think about this. If I'm in my own ecosystem, anything that, let's say, challenges or threatens the authority or capability or structure of that bias, that ecosystem, automatically becomes suspect in my brain. And I will give you this one story, and I find this to be completely interesting. We recently just had just what was an awful or horrific, if you will, attack that we saw against basically Paul Pelosi. Paul Pelosi, if you didn't hear, he is the husband of Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Again, I do not care if you love or hate Nancy Pelosi's politics, but somebody broke into his house, their house, I should say, basically with a hammer. Apparently, he had zip ties in his bag, according to reporting that happened later on, and essentially attempted to assault and successfully fractured Paul Pelosi's skull with a hammer. He was also asking, where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Because obviously this is politically motivated. Obviously this person is mentally deranged. Obviously this person does not represent the vast majority of people out there on the right or the left or anything else. Clearly this person is on the right on this particular incident. We've also seen incidents on the left as well. But my point is that as I am talking about those things, as this was unfolding, it was very interesting to see the deflections start from those on the right, meaning, oh, well, you know, I heard that, you know, this was actually a gay lover, a gay prostitute, you know, he was in his underwear. All of these things have been debunked.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.